Hello and welcome to Two Peas in a Pod, the medical education podcast from the Children's Emergency Department here in Derby. And I'm very pleased to be joined this evening by Dr. David Evans, who's the Vice President for Training and Assessment at the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health and a consultant neonatologist in Bristol. Good evening, David. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks very much, Ian. Good evening. Yep.
Excellent. So thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about something that I know you're very heavily involved in at the moment, which is the shape of paediatric training. And I think when I sort of think of this, I think it is a fairly new thing. But of course, the shape of training document is now nearly sort of about 6 years old now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's October 2013. So yeah.
So reading through that and sort of looking at some of the material that was put out at the time, it seemed to be very sort of heavily adult-based to sort of say, look, our population is changing and their needs are changing. Where does paediatrics fit in with the shape of training document?
Well, I think you're right, Ian, in that the majority of healthcare consumers are adults and it was perhaps written with that in mind. But I think a lot of the principles they described at the time still apply. And I think the shape of training document was a response perhaps to concerns that there was an over-specialisation in medicine and that clinicians were losing the ability to see the patient as a whole and patients were getting referred from one specialist to the other. And that tends to lead to over-investigation and over-treatment and things. And they wanted to try and bring training into a more holistic and broader-based scheme. And I think David Greenway, when he first proposed shape of training, was thinking of bringing sort of classes or families of specialties together and trying to train people within broad categories such as women and children's health. And I think that was potentially a little too revolutionary, and it got rather kicked into the long grass. I seem to remember Terence Stevenson using that phrase. And then I think subsequent governments then started to pick it up again and think, okay, well, let's just see how we could, use some of the principles and maybe not go for a wholesale, complete revolution. But we do need to change, and some of the principles we're still trying to address concerns which are very real.
Because, of course, we did have for a sort of a short period of time the BBTs, the broad-based trainees, which seemed quite a good idea and then kind of disappeared.
Yes, so BBT is still going, I think, in Scotland and Wales, and I think Northern Ireland have still got the programme in a pilot stage. But I think it was very popular when they ran it in England. But I think one of the concerns was that they really wanted to train more GPs. And so they were worried it was sort of diverting the workforce away from GPs. So unfortunately, the funding was pulled. But I think a lot of people do regret that because it did address some of those issues.
I guess some paediatricians would look at it and go, I get where you're coming from with adult medicine and trying to sort of have more generalists. But actually, in our college, in paediatrics, we remain, as many people sort of say, the last bastions of generalism within the hospital. So why does it affect paediatricians?
Well, I certainly agree with you. And I think when we had many discussions with the government shape of training group, they looked at our subspecialties and they saw the sort of 16, 17 subspecialties and general paediatrics and couldn't understand why we were trying to claim that we were paediatricians at heart. And I think it took a lot of convincing for them to realise that we are paediatricians, but the trouble is within the college, you tend to think about the differences rather than the similarities. Mm. I think that the shape of training is an opportunity for us to do something with our training that we want to do for our patients and not necessarily fall into line with the government, because I think, if we can do construct a training pathway which is a lot more flexible and meets the needs of the trainees and the patients, then you know, that then that will stand on its own logic if it's, you know, if it's going to be effective.
Yeah. So looking then at, obviously there's been a lot of discussion within the college as to how we as a college are going to move forward with our training. So as a sort of rough outline, what is the college's plan?
I think in a nutshell, it's a two-level training pathway. And the first section has got an indicative or an average training time of 4 years, and that we're going to call that core pediatrics. And then the latter section is called specialty pediatrics, and that has an indicative training time of 3 years. And I think the specialty pediatrics will probably be very similar to our current level three pediatrics, which is, you know, 3 years, and it encompasses subspecialty training and training in general pediatrics. And we're not particularly looking to change any of the subspecialties, so people still come out with a CCT in pediatrics with a bracket, you know, pediatric emergency medicine or neonatal intensive care, pediatric neurology, those sort of things. I think the biggest change really is the fact that we're going to have core pediatrics as 4 years. Mm. And the first major change really is that you will not need to have your full membership examination until the end of those 4 years. And the membership will be the gateway between the core pediatrics and the specialty pediatrics. The other new thing is that during your last year of core training, so that's ST4, you will essentially be on the middle grade rota.
Yeah.
And so you'll be on the middle grade rota before you necessarily need to have your full membership. And then the other 3 years, the ST1, 2 and 3, during ST2 and during ST3, there'll be more of a graduated transition to middle grade working. So you can imagine that during ST2, perhaps you'll act as a registrar during the daytime and there's lots of supervision. And as you go through ST3, you perhaps do it more frequently, but also start to include the evenings and the nights. And so by the time you get to ST4, it won't be a sudden surprise you're on the middle grade. And I think that was in response to looking at many trainees who, you know, understandably were very focused on getting their membership examination. They often got it during ST3, and then suddenly at ST4 they're on the middle grade rota. And almost their preparation being directed towards membership and not really directed towards management of uncertainty, leadership and middle grade responsibilities. So we just wanted to turn that focus around a little bit and get them to think about moving up to middle grade from an earlier stage, but as a more graduated, supported way.
Yeah, and sort of looking at that progression, I know you sort of said that's an indicative time.
Yeah.
As you said, progression's based on capability rather than time.
Yeah.
So that means that people could potentially progress very, very quickly, couldn't they?
Yes, and particularly if they've had other experience, sort of F3 years and those sort of things. And I think also it should fit better with the academic, the integrated academic training pathway as well, because that it would allow them to progress a little quicker, and their timing from doing core training, getting their PhD applications, doing UPAR PhD, and coming back into specialty training, I think would fit better. Sometimes I see some of the academic trainees get a bit stuck because they've done their level one training, they've done their PhD, and they then come back into level two training before they can start doing their subspecialty. So it doesn't necessarily suit them that well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly know several trainees locally who sort of have been in training for what seems like years and years and years. And that must be fairly demoralising for them, to be honest.
Yes. And the length of training is a very interesting question. So, you know, I think we've been challenged to reduce the length of training because it is a long training pathway. Now, we don't want to just reduce it for the sake of it. I mean, I think a lot of people think that the training is good, and obviously to be a consultant paediatrician, you need to be pretty capable And we often argue as paediatricians that a lot of our trainees start from a less of an experiential base, because a lot of the medical school paediatrics, there's a reduced placements in terms of time for paediatrics, and a lot of what medical school is about tends to be more surrounding adults. But nevertheless, it depends who you speak to. So if you speak to people thinking about applying for paediatrics, they say, gosh, well, you know, up to ST8, that's a long training. It is rather, it looks rather a challenge and potentially does put them off. If you speak to a lot of trainees in paediatrics, you know, they often say, well, I'm not that keen necessarily to finish my training. I actually value the training, and I think they're thinking about, you know, applying for consultant jobs, and so they're really interested, really keen to get as much experience and build up their CVs to be very competitive and get a good job. And so it is a bit of a paradox, really. And I think what we want to try and do is reduce the amount of mandatory training you need in time, and have an indicative time of 7 years, so the 4 years plus the three. Try and make the training more flexible in terms of, you know, you can progress quicker depending on your capabilities. Also, improve the options for outer program to introduce a bit of flexibility there for people who do want to spend a bit longer, you know, exploring some options. And I think that way we're trying to, you know, square that circle of offering a training scheme which is not necessarily that quick, but also allowing people to actually experience the paediatrics they want to.
Yeah. And of course, the other issue we've got to sort of think about and resolve, of course, is if we're giving people increasing flexibility to explore other things, you've still got to maintain a workforce, and we've still got to be compliant with the sort of new junior doctor's rota. And I think that's going to be hugely challenging, isn't it?
Yes. We had a recent stakeholder day, last week with heads of schools and training program directors, and we were debating this point. And as you may know, Health Education England are currently piloting an outer program, different category called outer program for pause, which allows people to step out of training but still do sort of NHS jobs. And Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales are looking at a similar sorts of options. And we were trying to say, well, you know, what is the risk? Because it's a balanced argument. If we offer more opportunities to go out a program in this way, then potentially more of the workforce will leave, you know, temporarily during the time which they take out a program. However, the sort of counter argument to that is often they will be in the paediatric workforce because they will be doing non-training jobs. Many of them would perhaps like to do some of the jobs that are advertised by trust, so the sort of clinical fellow jobs that have perhaps some simulation within their job plan, or quality improvement fellows, or some research, those sort of things. So they're often contributing to the acute rotas. The other thing is of course many trainees find the training burden quite heavy. And they've, you know, our trainees are really assessed an awful lot. You know, you have to keep up to date with their portfolios, with their workplace assessments, all those sort of things. And I think some of them just find it difficult to carry on. And having the ability just to step out of training for a pause and just release that training burden can really help. And I think I know quite a few trainees who've done that and have really actually found their renewed enthusiasm for paediatrics again, and then subsequently they've come back in.
Which can only be good.
You know, these people might potentially leave paediatrics if they don't have that flexibility, and by maintaining that flexibility we actually keep them within the workplace in the long term. So it is a risk, and I think it's perhaps a risk that we see is worth taking, and many schools have become much more liberal with out-of-programme experience, because they recognise that that's the issue, and the way to try and keep the trainees within the programme, within paediatrics, is to be much more liberal without a programme.
Do you think there's an argument that says actually this has come at quite a good time for paediatrics, because paediatrics is going through a bit of a, you know, a relative dip in popularity of people coming into the speciality training, and actually having time to now sort of shake things up a little bit, it falls quite nicely for us as a college.
Yes, I'm sort of smiling because I think, well, not wanting to precipitate a crisis, but I mean, a crisis is always a good time to try and get something done. And I think the GMC and Health Education England, the equivalent bodies in Wales, Northern Ireland, Scotland, you know, they will ultimately be approving the programme. And I think if we can present it as a way of improving the flexibility within the workforce, making the training scheme a bit more adaptable to both patient needs and individual needs, you know, with sort of more individualised progression, then I think it is a very good opportunity. And, you know, that there are a lot of initiatives within Health Education England, the GMC, which are to try and improve flexibility. And I think it's a pity that it's taken a junior doctor's dispute to actually produce these initiatives, because I think our training scheme became very inflexible. And I think that's my biggest desire for the new shape of training pathway, is it to be less restrictive and more flexible. And our current training is restrictive because it has three levels, and wherever you have a junction between one level and the other, there are sort of restrictions about what placements you have to do to satisfy level one training, level two training, level three training. And I want to try and break those down a little bit, so it gives program directors and trainees much more freedom to undertake placements according to their needs and the population needs, which will change around the different regions of the country. Yeah. Of course, the main, you know, what paediatricians need to be taught is already defined, and that's defined in the progress curriculum. So the shape of training, in a sense, is the second half of the development, and the first half was with the progress curriculum. And then the shape of training is more to do with how do schools actually deliver the progress curriculum, how do trainees, you know, learn the key capabilities.
So I never went through MMC.
Neither did I.
So I'm an old sort of fashioned Kalman trainee. In some ways, is this a sort of slight return to that?
Yes, I'm not pretending it's not. And I think, we do need to think about what was lost when we moved from Kalman training to MMC, and try and, you know, look at what was good about MMC, what was good about Kalman training, and try and, you know, achieve something that satisfies trainees and patients today.
Yeah. So then, subject to sort of approval, when are we potentially planning to roll this out then?
So we'd be looking to submit the proposals to the GMC, so 2020. And I think the earliest that it would come in would be sort of August, September changeover time, 2021. Just under 2 years now.
Right. And the question that sort of came in via Twitter was sort of saying, when will we notice the changes, and what do you perceive will be the first changes that trainees will notice on the ground?
Well, I've often said, and I'll say it again, that in a sense, I think the paediatric doctors will be working in the same posts on day one of shape of training that they were, you know, the day before shape of training. So the shape of training pathway doesn't necessarily mean that schools have to change everything instantly, but it allows them some flexibility to start to evolve. And I think what we will see is schools will start to look more critically at how the curriculum is delivered and what are the best and most efficient ways of delivering that curriculum. And that might differ depending on where you are in the country and how your service is set up. Part of the curriculum and part of the new aspects of core training will be trying to get more capabilities in sort of integrated primary and secondary care paediatrics. Also trying to equip our paediatricians to deal with some of the issues caused by the increased prevalence of child mental health issues, which impact on the acute service as well. So I think it'll give schools more food for thought about how they construct the pathways. I think the people who are least likely to notice the difference are those who are in the subspecialty or the level 3 general paediatric training, because those 3 years almost look identical.
Mm.
The question will be is what happens in transition, which I think is one of the other questions that came up on Twitter. You know, how do we move people from one pathway to the other, or do we allow people to carry on the old pathway whilst we start the new pathway? And I think we'd be a bit reluctant to allow people to carry on the old pathway, rather like we were reluctant to let them carry on the old curriculum forever. Because otherwise, you remember with Kalman training, you get some Kalman trainees and you've still got some old senior registrars, you know, many, many years down the line. And I think we want to try and make sure that the curriculum and the pathway is contemporary. So there will need to be some transition planning. And we have got various work streams within our SHAPE training group. And transition is one of the four work streams. So it's right up there in terms of importance. And I think it's looking at, you know, the ST3s and the ST4s who potentially will be going into level, their specialty training a year earlier than they thought. And it's about giving them some choice. So I think there will be some flexibility to try and smooth the transition between the two, because we don't want to, we can't suddenly have 2 years worth of cohorts applying to go into specialty training all in one go. Now, we know that the workforce is smoothed by various factors such as out-of-program experience, less than full-time working, parental leave and those sort of things. But I think we will also need to introduce some flexibility and allow people some choice. If they were expecting to go into a subspecialty a certain time, then we can't suddenly turn around and say, no, you've got to do it 1 year early before they feel they're ready.
And I guess maybe some consultants might be looking at this and going, well, that's great for trainees. There's greater flexibility. There's greater opportunities to do other things. But it's going to be the consultants that end up doing the work. Is that something that's a concern?
Well, I think it's a concern because I think most consultants are doing more work that they perhaps previously considered work for trainees. But I think that's not just a training issue. I think that's just an issue with how the nature of the work has changed within paediatrics. We can't really build a service around trainees. The service has to be built around trained paediatricians, and that's both consultants and other trained paediatricians such as staff grades, and also getting other professions into the workforce such as physicians associates and advanced nurse practitioners. I think the consultants, there will be potentially more consultants, because if we train paediatricians for less time, then there'll be potentially a minor glut of CCT holders coming out. So there will be a workforce, consultant workforce expansion.
Yeah. So it's a time of potentially really quite significant change for the college and for our workforce. How positive and how optimistic do you feel at the moment about things?
Well, I'm by nature an optimist. I think that, the shape of training is not going to solve the workforce issue. It's about training paediatricians. The way you solve the workforce issue is think about who needs to look after children, and, do we need more of those particular people? And I think we do need more consultant paediatricians. The college have been calling for that for many years now. I don't think it's necessarily heard, or perhaps some of the people perhaps don't tend to want to listen. The problem, of course, is that, okay, we need more consultant paediatricians, but where do these people come from? Even if we advertise for more paediatric trainee placements, there's no guarantee we'd fill them because it's a competitive system and all the specialties and particularly primary care are expanding. So where do we get the doctors from? Do they come from overseas? Do we try and expand the medical training initiative for overseas doctors? What happens with, you know, EU doctors post-Brexit? What about the nursing staff, nurse practitioners and also physicians associates? So I think there's big uncertainty there. And I think that if you think about the effect of the shape of training, it's probably only going to have a sort of, you know, 20% of effect on the overall, you know, problem, if you like. So whilst I think it will help because it will be less restrictive, I don't think for a second it will cure the problem. And, you know, there are other issues that need to be addressed.
Absolutely. So to just finally conclude then, David, for people listening to this, trainees or consultants or whoever, where should we sort of keep watching and what should we watch out for next for further information?
Well, the college website, of course, sort of hosts the pathway. And for those people who like looking at diagrams, then we have the pathway there and we have some of the explanations. I think what it means on the ground, I think that will become perhaps over the next year increasingly coming from the schools, because I think, you know, we've been engaging with them to start to think about how the placements, you know, where doctors will work and what sort of programs are going to be on offer for that particular region. And I think the other thing would be to look out for is for the college websites is for the transition planning. If people are thinking about undertaking some subspecialties, and perhaps if they are currently a sort of ST2 trainee, that sort of cohort, they're the ones that would probably have some choice about when they go into subspecialty training, but it's a good time to start to explore the options and so you can make an informed choice. And I think, you know, that is one of the challenges that we've set the schools as well for SHAPE. You know, if you've only got 4 years before you go into subspecialty training, then you've got one less year to make that decision. So we would like to try and improve the information, set up sort of systems whereby people can go to get information about subspecialties, but also have more opportunities for out-of-programme experience for people to explore those subspecialties so they can make a better informed choice. The other thing we are doing is within the subspecialties, we're looking to see if we can allow people to move from one subspecialty to the other if they feel they've not made the best choice, because many of the subspecialties do share a lot of curricular content. So you could perhaps potentially move from one training system to another within the first 12 months, you know, subject to availability and the appropriate appointment process. So there's lots of ideas, I think, that we've started to crystallize over the last 12 months, and I think now it is started to you know, put it onto paper and you know, come up with protocols and transition planning, and the schools will come up with their programs.
Lovely. So watch this space, basically.
You know, I always love speaking to paediatricians about training, and you know, many of the arguments I sympathise with, and you know, it's a big debate about what we do, and I don't think this is going to be a magic bullet, but I think it's going to the flexibility is going to be much valued. I think I
agree entirely, David. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been fascinating to talk to you, as always. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Ian.